Fourth and final hour on this Thursday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe, Willie D has left the building. Preds are heading out, heading to Chicago. Last road game in February. They'll be playing the Blackhawks tomorrow night, 7:30 puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 6:30, and they'll be right back here Saturday night hosting the Columbus Blue Jackets. Don't forget, right after we talk to Elliot Freeman, who joins us every time on Thursday, or every Thursday at this time, excuse me, we will give away a pair of tickets to see the Predators and Senators here at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday. That'll be February 25th, so be listening after Elliot. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
It's snowing in Nashville, so it's a little weird. We don't get much snow here.
Snowing?
But yeah.
Holy smokes.
I know.
It's not sticky, don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell you, if I went down to Nashville and it snowed, I would ask for my money back. Like, I go down there to get away from this garbage.
I bet. No doubt about it. It's been an interesting week, hasn't it? So I'm just going to kind of leave it to you on what's been the most interesting part of this week, because there's already been a lot of activity, as we said here, on February 20th, and we know the trading deadline is Monday.
Yeah, I mean the run on defensemen the other day was the interesting one. I think the prices were more expensive than people thought they were going to be. There are still a few really interesting players left. I think we're kind of, I mean, there's always one surprise at the deadline, like somebody who comes out of nowhere to get traded, and I'm still kind of waiting for that. I think a lot of the names that we have out there are names that we kind of expect and have predicted that could be on the move. I usually think somebody comes that's a bit of a surprise. So I'm kind of waiting for that. I look at you guys. I mean, I can't figure your team out. Like,
we can't either. It's okay.
Elliot. That line is long.
You get in the playoffs a couple of weeks ago, but you've beaten Calgary, you fall out, you sweep a back-to-back with a really good team, you lose at home. The thing is, like, I think with you guys, I don't know if I would do a rental unless it was a really cheap price. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you do rentals when you think you have a chance to win or you feel you absolutely have to get into the playoffs. I'm not betting on you guys to win this year. Too inconsistent. Maybe you feel you need to make the playoffs. Like, one name I've heard with you guys is Connor Sherry from Buffalo. He played for John Hines in the American Hockey League, and I think he'll get traded. Team like yourself, maybe go back to Pittsburgh where he won a couple of cups. But, I mean, I'm still waiting for some of the biggest dominoes to fall, like Chris Kreider from the Rangers and maybe Josh Anderson from Columbus, guys like that.
I said yesterday on the show when we talked about it for a good while, I said if I were David, and David sat down with us Tuesday at the arena for his weekly chat with us, and I said if I were him, I would just probably stand pat. That would be me. Unless somebody blew his socks away on something, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I still think he's going to test on his UFAs, Smith, Granlund. Yep. If he's not going to sign them, I think he'll put them out there to see what he can get for them. I mean, boy, you know, the Granlund thing is really interesting to me. He's played great, as you guys know, since Hines took over. He's been a much better player. You know, it's a small sample size, but forces you to make a decision quick.
So you think Kreider, and it's interesting, so we've seen the Blues, as you mentioned, they've made a move.
Yep.
You know, Avalanche are interesting. The Bruins still have it. So there's some teams that feel that they're really good that really haven't struck yet. Vancouver obviously made their play. The Capitals have been in there. Tampa's been in there. So who do you think of the teams that are right in the thick of things that haven't made a move are going to be the ones really trying to strike first?
I think Boston for sure. The team Tampa has, Washington has. I think Washington might try to do something else. They've got a defenseman there, Nick Jensen, who just hasn't worked, and I think they could be trying to move him to free up some room to do something else. I know Washington, like, did talk to the Rangers about Kreider. I mean, that's not an easy deal for them to make, especially now that they've added Dillon on defense. but I know they were interested. And if they can move Jensen out, he carries about a $2.5 million a year salary. It gives them maybe the ability to do something. You know, the Boston, for sure. They didn't want to give up a first-rounder for Coleman. I don't think they're crazy about trading a first-round pick. But I think they're looking around. They're definitely on Kreider. I think if Josh Anderson from Columbus is healthy, they'd be around there. Palmieri for New Jersey, I'm not convinced he's going to get dealt, but I think they're around that. And Brandon Saad from Chicago, he's got a year left, and it's not 100% he gets traded, but I think, you know, Boston's around that too if Chicago wants to do it. So I think also Chicago's in a Boston's in a situation where their core is getting a little bit older. I think they kind of look at it like they kind of have to go for it. They're pretty good. So I think they will do something, even though it hasn't been done yet. And I think the Islanders, who are going out west and having a lot of trouble scoring and losing games, I think they're going to do something, too, to add some offense.
Interesting. Elliot Friedman on the line with us, Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, 31 Thoughts. And you're the perfect guy to ask this question to, because we were talking earlier about Adam Schefter, and this is a compliment to you. I mean, we kind of view you as the Adam Schefter of hockey. You're well tied in to the sport. You talk to a lot of people, and you just don't throw things out there to see if it'll stick. You've got good info, and you're talking to always the right people. And Schefter's no different on the NFL side for ESPN. And, you know, he's thrown out there that speaking with Jeff Darlington, and he kind of threw out Tom Brady to the Titans, a story that will not go away in this market. And we were just kind of talking about that delicate balance of you deal with a lot of agents and you deal with people in front offices, and you talk to a lot of people, and that balance of, you know, they may be trying to steer you a certain way or get a message out there, and how you handle situations like that.
Well, I think that, well, first of all, it's very nice of you to say. You know, I wouldn't put myself in the same class as Adam Schefter. He breaks a lot more stories than I do, but it is very nice of you to say. You know, I think that one of the things I tell people is, don't tell me something that isn't true. You know, like, there's a story I tell. I actually tell students when I speak to students. A few years ago, I had a general manager call me, and he says, I need you to float something for me. And I started laughing. I was like, what? And he said, you know, like, I want you to mention that this particular player is available. And I said to him, like, I'm not just doing that because, like, sometimes when this happens, like, you can really throw a thunderbolt through a player's family and things like that. So I said, you got to tell me that there's actual truth to this. And he goes, yes, there is truth to it. We're considering it. And I think our owner wants to kind of see what the reaction would be. So I researched it, and I found there was truth to it. And so I did it. And then a couple days later, I called and followed up, and the GM was kind of like, yeah, my owner didn't like the reaction. It's not happening. So, but the thing is, what I learned from that is, if there's truth to something, I'm willing to investigate it. But I always tell people, you know, don't lie to me. I know there's times where I think there's times like if I come to you with something and you deny it, and it eventually happens, I can deal with that. I don't like it, but I can deal with it because sometimes these guys have to lie. What I don't like is when you give me something that's clearly false. And that's what I always say to guys. Like, I understand that people always try to benefit, and people are always trying to spin you, and people are always trying to get their version out there. And I always say, as long as there's truth to it, we're good. It's when you're telling me something that's a flat-out lie that either I won't do it, or if I find out later, that we're going to have a problem. That's the way I try to approach it anyway.
Talking to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. He joins us every Thursday at 1 o'clock. So going back to something you said with the Predators and possibly David Poile shopping the UFAs, you know, I try and look at what this team is going to be moving forward, because we know it's been a down year and there are going to be changes this summer. Kyle Turris is playing better. So is he part of the change, or is he part of the future? I think that's a question that has to be answered. But let's say he does trade somebody like a Craig Smith. Could you see a scenario where he moves him at the deadline, get something for him, and then circles back around this summer to bring him back, since he's been such a key part of this team for so long?
Yeah, I do think scenarios like that, like, you know, like Montreal just traded a defenseman to St. Louis named Marco Scandella, and there are people out there who think he's going to end up going back. And I think there's more of a chance of things like that happening now because, you know, the cap isn't going up by very much. And also, you know, you don't become a UFA in this league until you're either 25 years old or you've played 7 years. And this is a year that's getting younger, a league that's getting younger and younger. And I think veteran players are more interested in, A, they know the squeeze is getting tighter, and B, they're also happy to go for situations where they know. So I think you're going to see that happen more and more. So I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but I'm saying it could happen. I would believe it's more likely to happen in this day and age than it used to be. You know, the other thing I think with your team is, if you guys don't make the playoffs this year, I can't see David Poile, who's made some of the biggest deals in the NHL over the past couple of years, sitting there and saying, we're coming back next year with the same group. Like, you know, now some of his players have clauses, and that depends on, you know, what, you know, players are willing to do and not do. And look, he's not trading Ellis, and he's not trading Yossi, and I really doubt he's trading Ekholm, but I could see him putting some of your bigger names out there. And not necessarily trading them, but just saying, okay, what's the market for them? Like, I could see him doing it for, like, a Johansson or an Arvidsson or a Duchesne, and not saying that he's going to do it, but potentially just seeing, okay, I can't come back with the same group. What are my options? And I think if you miss the playoffs, I wouldn't be surprised if he did something like that.
Do you think that the Kyle Turris narrative has changed now that John Hines is in and clearly this system, whatever it is working for him?
You know, I think that you always, like, I always think it's easier to solve your problem than trade your problem. Like, I'm a big believer in that. One GM told me that once. I think it's a great saying. It's easier to solve your problem than trade your problem. So I think that if Turris starts to play better and you guys say, you know what, he's part of the solution here, that's better for you. But I also find it hard to believe that after this whole year of testing his market value, if he plays better, you guys don't continue to test it.
Before we let you go, you in your 31 thoughts, and we've had some fun with this, you brought up Shea Weber. Now, we know Shea Weber quite well. I know what kind of tough player he is, but I think we all had written him off that he was going to be out for the season, and then it was 4 to 6 weeks, and then all of a sudden he's back in the lineup. And I don't know if you've realized this, but if he doesn't miss another game, April 1st in Nashville would be game number 1,000.
Yeah, someone told me that yesterday. I only realized because of that. I mean, that would be so fitting. I mean, wouldn't that be the way it should be?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't write off Shea Weber because I'm too scared to write off Shea Weber. Like, you know, nobody's making the mountain man upset, that's for sure. You know, I'd love to see that. I think actually that's a national game in Canada. That's a Wednesday night, right? So that's the national game in Canada that night that I work on. And I think there are a lot of fans in this country who would love to see that happen. Shea Weber play game number 1,000 in Nashville. And I can only imagine what the reaction would be if that did occur.
That would be so awesome that night. By the way, if you ever want to get to Shea's sweet spots, talk to him about baseball, talk to him about dogs, you can talk to him about kids. Those are his sweet spots. He'll talk to you all day. The minute you start talking hockey, conversation gets a little bit shorter.
Fantasy football.
Fantasy. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Fantasy baseball, too.
Yes.
Yeah, he loves fantasy football and baseball.
There's a feature I've been looking to work on with him, and I think we're going to do it next year. But yes, I was told fantasy football is the big one for Shea Weber. He, as a matter of fact, there was one time I had the number one pick, and I sent him an email, and I said, just what do you think here? And he made fun of my keepers. He said they were garbage, and he said I'm a horrible – I think he basically joked that if those are your keepers, you're such a bad GM, it's not going to help you anyway. But he gave me some suggestions.
I think this was last year, right? He missed a lot of time last year, I believe. When they came through here, I was standing on the corner.
No, it was
Was that two years ago? It was 2 years
ago. I think you're right. It was 2 years ago, Elliot. I'm standing on the corner. I'm headed to the – it's directly across the street from the arena, and I'm at a light, and I feel somebody tap my shoulder. And I just figured it was, you know, probably a Predators fan or somebody wanted to talk about the game tonight. I turn around. It was Shea. And I was like, oh. I said, well, I guess you're not playing tonight. And he said, no. And so I asked, you know, we talked a couple of hockey things, and it was very short and brief. And then the minute I said, you know, how's the Mastiffs? You know, how's the family? We started just talking about it. And then, you know, the next thing you know, I had to go, Shea, I have to go do pregame. So good seeing you. I mean, you know what I mean? You get him off on something else, family, baseball, you know, he'll talk to you all day. He's a great guy. Great guy. I mean, he was certainly one of my favorites I've ever dealt with, for sure. And, man, it would be awesome if Game 1000 is here in Nashville on April 1st. And that's not a joke, by the way.
They're going to have to drag him off the ice to miss a game before that.
No doubt.
And we were just reminded of that right now.
No doubt. Elliot, always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for doing this.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Elliot Freeman with Sportsnet. We'll come back and give you an opportunity to win some tickets to be in the building on Tuesday against the Senators. We do that on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff as always. Elliot Freeman. Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts is always really, really good. SEC Media Days. We'll come back talking in just a minute. Their schedule is out.
It is.
Chase, in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be at the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yep.
The Omni Hotel, the CNN Center. Going to be spread all about in that area.
Yep. So we've, you know, obviously been to these a lot. And on Monday, July 13th, it kicks off with Florida, the defending national champion LSU, Missouri, those three on that day. Tuesday will be Georgia, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, and Vanderbilt. Wednesday, July 15th, this is the big day. Alabama leads it off with Nick Saban. Arkansas, the SEC Media Day's debut of Mike Leach with Mississippi State, and then Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee. And then on Thursday, July 16th, it closes out with Auburn, South Carolina, and Texas A&M. So they've changed it up. Vanderbilt's been on the last day the last few years. So interesting that they're on the second day. And I know they try and mix it up, but that Wednesday, that's going to be a big one with Mike Leach, his debut, but Nick Saban, of course, and then Proval's fans for Jeremy Pruitt. So should be cool. Looking forward to it.
No doubt about it. It's a good schedule. I don't know how this rotation is going to work, how they're going to do. We didn't go down, or at least I didn't, in Atlanta the first time.
Yep.
I didn't, from everybody I talked to, it didn't seem like everybody was certainly glowing or like, whoa, man, they need to do more of that. You know,
I didn't love it.
I know it's a big change from Birmingham and / Hoover.
And it's Atlanta. It's fun. Like, there's obviously more to do.
No doubt.
But it was the All-Star break, so unless you got down there early. Like, I went down Saturday so I could get a couple Braves games in. So I did two games, Braves Diamondbacks, and then we were all there Sunday afternoon to get ready for Monday. But then it's the All-Star break, so the Braves are out of town, so you don't have that. I believe Atlanta United might have been in town, but there wasn't that much really going on other than SEC Media Days. They did a tour of the stadium, which was cool because Mercedes-Benz Stadium was, you know, fairly new, but it was definitely different because it's more spread out. I mean, when you're in Birmingham at the Winfrey, everything is right there together. You go upstairs and you're in the media room. At the College Football Hall of Fame, they had Radio Row in the Omni, and so they had us over in the exhibit halls in the Omni, and then they were doing all the press conferences over in the College Football Hall of Fame, which was about a 5-minute walk. So you couldn't just run around from room to room. You had to give yourself more time, and from our standpoint of trying to get guests on Radio Row, it was tricky. It was harder because people aren't walking through like they are. And I know we're trying to explain how this all works for us, but in Birmingham, they're literally, like, to go to the mall or into the hotel, you have to walk down Radio Row. Mm-hmm. So we can just reach out and be like, hey, so-and-so, can you come on for a few minutes? And that's kind of how it works. So, and then I, you know, obviously next year it'll be in Nashville, so we don't know how that's going to work yet.
Right.
Makes it easier for us because they're in our backyard, but...
Well, that area they were talking about at the time is, I have it.
Yeah.
Is everything getting built up there?
I think they're working on it, but I don't think it's done by any
right.
means.
I knew it was
close.
Something that was basically in construction.
Right, at Nashville Yards.
Yeah.
I think is what it was. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the whole rotation of SEC Media Days, I like the idea. It's obviously good for our city, but there is something different now that I've been to Birmingham a couple times and then Atlanta once. There's something about Birmingham that is just it's familiar, it's all compact, it's all right there together, and so it's easier to maneuver and to move around. And
I think it's too small personally. I think the SEC's outgrown it.
It has. I'm just saying from a standpoint of convenience.
We both know where it's going to work the best.
Yeah. Here.
Yeah.
And I think Atlanta's too spread out, so I think that's why it's going to work well here. I mean, I just think you can put it all together like it is in Birmingham, whereas it's cool that it's in the College Football Hall of Fame, but like I said, even though it's connected to the Omni, it's a big Omni, so you have to walk.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want you to think, oh, we're lazy, we don't want to walk. It's just when you're facing deadlines or you're trying to get a coach on a show or something, it's much easier when they just have to, they're right above you or they're walking down Radio Row. Like, there were some coaches that didn't even sniff Radio Row. I mean, it just never even came
by.
There
are some
and Jeremy
coaches
Pruitt was one of them
in Birmingham that never do.
Right, but it was there were more.
Mm-hmm.
There were definitely more in Atlanta. So it was just, you know, it was definitely different.
Shocking on Pruitt doing that. Seems to love them talking and doing the media. So Monday is Florida, the national champs, LSU, yep, and Missouri. This is on July 13th. July 14th on Tuesday, it'll be Kirby Smart in Georgia, Mark Stoops in Kentucky, Lane Kiffin in Ole Miss, Derek Mason and Vanderbilt to round out the day. Wednesday, July 15th, we'll have Nick Saban. Little Nicky will kick things off, followed by Sam Pittman at Arkansas in his first SEC Media Days. Mike Leach, Mississippi State, Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee, finishing up on Wednesday. Thursday, we'll have Gus Malzahn. Very, very, very good radio pipes. Auburn's coach, Will Muschamp, South Carolina, Jimbo Fisher will close out SEC Media Days, Texas A&M. So
it's going to be interesting because
– is that date a little bit earlier or no?
It does feel like it's a week early.
I thought it feels a little bit earlier than normal. No?
A little bit. Not by much, but a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. I guess it is always right in the middle, right? Because that's going to be the – because they do it, and it's smart. That week of the ESPYs, nothing, all-star break, nothing going on sports-wise.
They get the center stage.
Yeah. Smart.
I think outside of Nick Saban and then Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach, you know, coming to the SEC – I am curious to, you know, hear from guys like a Jeremy Pruitt or Dan Mullen. You know, Florida is a team that people have identified as on the rise. And then Jimbo Fisher. I mean, this is going to be year three for Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. And I think they have to take some big steps to begin to justify the contract that they gave him. So I'm curious to hear what he has to say as he will end SEC Media Days. He'll be the last one. So pretty cool schedule. Like how it is mapped out. Obviously, Ed O will be fun to listen to talk about that whole experience, but looking forward to it in July.
The Predators, this is not a joke. The Predators play here at Bridgestone Arena, home, on Wednesday, April 1st. Like I said, that's not an April Fool's joke. That will be the third to last game of the regular season. Who do the Predators play in that game? If you can correctly tell us who that is, tell Elijah, or just call us, 615-737-1025. You'll be in the arena on Tuesday to see the Predators and the Senators.
Yep.
Who do the Predators play here at Bridgestone Arena Wednesday, April 1st.
They're going to play.
There you go. You just gave it away.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We'll be back with more here on ESPN 1025 The Game. We appreciate Elliot Friedman kicking off this hour. And every week when he comes on Thursdays at 1, it's brought to you by Kerry Zire, Remax Elite. Good stuff from him as always. On the Predators front, Ryan Ellis skated with the team today. They practiced before heading to the airport and heading to Chicago to play the Blackhawks tomorrow night at 7:30. That'll be a pregame at 6:30. Everything heard right here. But Ryan Ellis was practicing with Roman Josi on that first D pairing. John Hines says he, of course, is going to be on the trip, and there's a chance he plays, but they need to see how he responds to another full practice. So looks like all signs are pointing towards, unless there's a setback, that possibly Ryan Ellis returns after missing 20 games since the Winter Classic.
Yeah, that would be a huge addition. I mean, it's something we've talked about for weeks of getting him back and what he would bring to the lineup. Now, as you like to say, temper, got to temper expectations. You can't just throw him back in there and expect him to, you know, just light it up. But I think this is a great step in the right direction. Hopefully he responds well. I think they just want to see how he feels is what they mean by that. I've seen reports he's on the plane, so he's headed to Chicago, and we'll find out tomorrow. I know usually under John Hines, if they practice, the next day is an optional morning skate, so we'll see if they put him out there just to kind of see what he has. But I think you got to feel much better, especially with him practicing on the power play and then, as you said, being paired with Roman Josi. Like what I hear.
Yep. Did you see this? And I'm not making this up. Did you see this story about that Little League in Pennsylvania?
No.
It's a league, I guess, about 60 miles east of Williamsport, where they do the Little League World Series. Their director came out and said they will no longer have a team called the Astros in their league. You laugh.
That's interesting.
Let me tell you something.
I haven't.
True story.
I have never thought of that until now.
I had a parent of one of the new kids on our team, Tidal Wave Blue, send me a message yesterday and ask if they could change, because we have the new kids. We have not ordered the jerseys for them yet. So we told everybody what numbers are taken from the kids who were on with us in the fall. And they already submitted their new numbers. I had a parent reach out to me yesterday and said, "Coach, would you mind if we changed our number?"
Let me guess. They are number one. That's Altuve, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's exactly right. Wanted to change away from Altuve's number. And I didn't realize at the time they picked the number because of Altuve. And they have asked to change the number.
It's something you don't
like. It's
something I don't think about.
I know, but I don't guarantee know if you have until you this there's point. More. There's more stories like that all over the place.
Right. What's Maddox wearing?
25.
So I don't know who that would be, but that it's interesting because so many kids will choose a number based on their favorite player. Like growing up in the rare time that I did make an appearance on the athletic fields or the court, I wanted to wear number 3. Number 3 was my number because of Dale Earnhardt or Dale Murphy. But then if 3 was taken, I'd go to 10, which was Chipper. So, but 3 was my favorite. So a lot of times kids do that. And it's just something I didn't really think about until now. But as soon as you said it, I'm like, you know, that makes a ton of sense that the parents want to move their kids as far away from that as possible.
Well, he's not one. He was 27. That's the kid. That was the number that he had.
Oh, 27?
Altuve is 27.
Who's one? I thought Altuve was one.
No, or he's 27.
Correa's one.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, no, he was 27, and he asked to change the number.
Yeah. Well,
and told me why.
Because of his father. Altuve.
Yeah, he said that.
Yeah.
I would honestly, I don't think I would have put it, I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have put that together, why he was wanting to change off 27. But he told me, he's like, you know, I just.
So you haven't, as a parent, you haven't, I mean, you haven't put any of that together or thought about it and, at all yet?
Nope.
But now that it's come up, does it, it doesn't surprise you either?
No. No, I wouldn't.
That's
say
how big this is.
I wouldn't surprise. I don't know. I guess I should be surprised because as much as we've talked about it and we have talked about the severity of this and how big of a deal this is going to be, I don't know why I thought it was just going to stop in the bigs. Like right. There's going to be no trickle-down effect. Of course there's going to be a trickle-down effect. I mean, his dad said, I don't want my kid wearing a cheater's number.
Yeah.
That's what he said. And I am like, oh. I didn't even really. I was like, okay, all right. But that's how bad this is, and that story
and
I said is not made up. A league in Pennsylvania, a little league, has said we are doing away with the team Astros. Now, a lot of you out there listening may say that's silly, and that's okay. That's your opinion. It's obviously not silly to them. And if you are a parent out there, is it silly to change a number off one of the Astros? Especially a guy like Al. I feel like Altuve is the one, right? He feels it like, I could be wrong. I don't know. You tell me. He feels like if you were to say who's the guiltiest party of all. Like,
who's the villain?
Like who everybody identifies as the guiltiest one of all, which we know they're multiples. There's no one answer. But when you say people would start with Altuve, I mean the visual that is we always say it's the video always tell if you have the video it's going to change everything.
Yep,
it always does. Ray Rice, that doesn't play out if the video doesn't get released. It's the video that changes everything. If we would have had video on Hardy. Was that his name? Greg Hardy, the one that went to the Cowboys from the Panthers? If we had video on him of what he was accused of doing, he wouldn't have played for the Dallas Cowboys. That's how it works. But we didn't have video.
Right.
And the video of him going to home plate, I just kind of feel like he is kind of villain number one. And that I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he cheated any more than anybody else on that roster, but –
but he's the one that has been identified.
That visual, and then the story of the bad tattoo. It's hard, you know. Yeah. I'm like, I kind of roll my eyes at that.
Yeah,
I just kind of feel like he's the front man for the, I guess, cast of cheaters.
Right. Could you see a scenario? Because I can't think back of anything to this magnitude that has brought down a franchise. Now you can look at it from the college ranks. Like we all remember SMU, you know, we all remember that stuff. I mean, there have been things in college that have brought down programs, but a professional franchise, like, could you see this getting that big where the Astros are, you know, basically, or I'm not going to say completely go away, but they got to change their name, or they got to completely reinvent themselves, or I mean, it cripples the franchise.
It's a really good question. I don't know.
Like Donald Sterling was forced; he was fired as an owner.
As an owner, right?
Like
how many times do we see that in sports? Like very rarely. He literally got pushed out or fired.
You got to sell the team
as an owner,
right?
I don't know. That's a really good question.
And Jim Crane, you know, has. He hadn't handled it great, but like, what did he know? What didn't he know? You know, he's not. I'm not going to proclaim him to be innocent in all of this. So, I mean, is there a point where it's like, you know what? You got to go, and they do everything but move the franchise. They change the name. They get rid of all these players that are part of this. I mean, they pretty much have to start from scratch. I don't know. I'm just asking.
It seems a little far-fetched. That would happen, but I don't don't know.
But it's not going away.
No.
And it's building.
No.
And you have...
It's not going to even come close to going away. We haven't even... By the way, it hasn't really even started.
Yeah, because the season hadn't started. And you have little league teams that are wanting to drop the name Astros. And that may sound insignificant, but that's the brand. And that's promoting the brand.
Look, our... Doing the rec ball life. Mm-hmm. Maddox has been doing since he was three. Up until we started this new...
Yeah.
This new adventure, okay? It was all, every team in the league was all Major League Baseball teams that we've all, that's all we've ever known.
He was with the Braves.
And he was with the Braves, and it was the colors, it was the, it, everything. It looked like the Major League teams, all the uniforms. So to your point, I mean that.
And by the way, those Major League teams have to grant permission for that to happen. So, because that is a trademarked logo. So there is a method to the madness from these major league teams, because it's another form of advertising for their brand.
Sure. And it's kids, young, mm-hmm. impressionable kids.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it gets to that point. It's a really good question. I think to scoff at that or to laugh at that, like it has no chance, is probably a little crazy.
Yeah.
To do that, because if stuff like this is happening, I just told you a story of yesterday. A parent wanted their kid's number changed on our team because the number he chose was 27, and it was because he wanted it off of that number. And a Pennsylvania Little League said, we're getting rid of the team Astros. This is the beginning of all of this. We haven't even seen them hit the road yet. We haven't seen how this is all going to play out. When eventually all the smoke clears, I don't know. It's a good question. I think probably the answer is no, but I don't know.
I just think it's something to definitely think about.
Yep. We'll come back and wrap up Thursday's show next. Congratulations, Joan in Columbia, Tennessee. Joan correctly guessed that the Montreal Canadiens were coming to town on April 1st.
Montreal.
You probably figured that out from our conversation with Elliot Freeman. So, Joan, congratulations to you. We'll see you in Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday when the Predators host the Senators. That's Tuesday, February 25th.
Should be a fun one there on April 1st if all goes to plan. With Shea Weber potentially playing in game number 1,000 in the arena where he had so many great moments, including the one where he scored a goal from section 300 or something like that. Remember when he did that with Dierks Bentley? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it'll be cool. And we brought it up when we were done with our conversation with David Poya. Like, did you know that? And he goes, I'm aware of that. So. Pretty cool.
That would be really interesting if it played out that way. So what do you think is the next layer to the Tom Brady story? Or is there another layer? Does anybody else come out and say anything?
I mean, look,
it's kind of hard to really top Darlington and Schefter.
Yeah, and Darlington will actually join Jared and the GM today at 3. But look, those are two very well-connected guys. So something you brought up earlier, Adam Schefter doesn't just throw stuff out there to see if it's going to stick. He has clearly done research on this. I thought Elliot really shared some insight on how he goes about, his business. I think this thing's going to continue to grow until a franchise tag is placed on Ryan Tannehill, or Ryan Tannehill is signed to a long-term deal, or they get to the point where free agency opens and the Titans don't have a quarterback. If they get to the point where free agency opens and there's not a tag and the only quarterback under contract with this team is Logan Woodside, then I'm probably going to start to lean more towards, okay, Tom Brady's coming here. Because they don't let it get to that point if they don't have some sort of guarantee that Tom Brady's coming here. That's how I feel. So how they figure that out, who knows?
Do you think John Robinson and Mike Vrabel know today how it's going to play out behind closed doors?
That's a good question.
Do you think they're just
I don't
as much in the dark on how this is going to play out as us?
Because Tom is able to do that. For the first time in his career, he is facing free agency. And, you know, he's doing the Hulu commercials. He's trolling everybody. I mean, with his tweets and the videos. Because he can. Because he can. He's doing it because he can. So, no, I don't think they have any idea. And they're, you know, Mike Vrabel is one of his close friends. I just think he's going to let this process play out and see how much he can do and what, you know, what it's going to bring him, meaning Brady. So, no, I don't think they know. I think they're trying to find out, but they're also...
Well, I mean, John Robinson has had conversations we don't know about. So,
of course he has. Mike Vrabel has too.
So, right. So you don't think that they have a clearer picture than us?
They may have a clearer picture than we do, but I don't think they know the answer. Because I don't think Tom Brady wants anybody to know the answer yet. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to let anybody know. He can have his fun right now and figure it out. Plus, I don't think, you know, back to what you said earlier, and I thought it was a good analogy of you can like both, but you have to know which one you want to date. You have to make a decision. I think maybe they're still trying to figure that out.
I don't believe that. I just don't.
Why wouldn't they at this point?
I believe they know who they want. Doesn't mean they're going to get, but they know who they want.
They know who's
number one.
Because I don't think they have to know. They don't have to know yet.
How could you not know who's number one on your list? How?
Because you're there could be doing like I'm doing.
What do you need to do? Go look at film?
No, but you're going back and forth, and you're thinking, all right, well.
Play rock, paper, scissors?
Here's the guy that got us to the AFC Championship game in Ryan Tannehill. They hear things. They hear their running back that they're also trying to sign. That's another factor. Well, I mean, I know this sounds silly, but what if Derrick Henry, you know, is waiting to see who his quarterback's going to be? And I know that's silly to think that, but he could be doing that. And it's also silly to think that he would turn down playing with Tom Brady, but maybe he just really likes Ryan Tannehill. We don't know that. These are all things that I think are being discussed and they're thinking about.
That'd be one of the silliest things I think I've ever heard.
I understand.
If a player said, you know, I'm not sure I want to play with Tom Brady.
But I think there are some sense, there's not much anymore, but there are some senses of loyalty. And I think that you do have to look at.
Chase, it's freaking 13 games.
I know.
Come on, man.
I understand.
You act like to get to that level, you act like they've been playing side by side the last 7 years. I mean, okay, then you can reach a level of loyalty. I mean, 13 games. Come on, man.
But if you were in
his. It can't be that rooted. It cannot be that deep to the core.
But if you were in that locker room and you were on that team and 17 is the guy that helped you get to the AFC Championship game, I mean, you're not thinking about that?
No, come on. One, he's probably thinking, I had just as big of a part of this as anybody.
Well,
he wasn't the quarterback.
He had a very big part of it.
If it wasn't for me, we wouldn't have been in that position. So how in the world could he fit? I'm not saying that he doesn't like him. Of course he could have great affection for Ryan Tannehill. But, I mean, I don't know how in the world. First of all, players know it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get to choose. They don't get called into an office and the GM and the head coach says, okay, so what do you think we should do? I mean, what do you want us to do? What are you thinking? They don't do that. They're out of sight, out of mind at this point. There's no communication. There's nothing going on. So this is all part of it.
Yeah. Look, and it's the speculation and everything that we're going through is all a part of it. We're not going to know for a while. We're just not. I mean, March 18th, I think it is when free agency opens. I mean, it's less than a month away, but we still have some time. They got to go through the franchise tag. And I mean, we're going to have the answer if all of a sudden it comes out, Tennessee Titans have placed the franchise tag on Ryan Tannehill. There's your answer. They've made their choice. When that happens, if that happens, then we'll know. But until that point, I mean, we can go round and round all we want.
I just think they know. Do they know absolutely in their room?
I would love to know if they know.
If they put up one name, I think they could absolutely go up with certainty and write a name out right now. So that is our number one target.
Do you
right there?
What name do you think they know?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. What their answer is, I suspect it's TB12. That's what I suspect is the number one target.
I don't know either.
I know what mine would be, but I don't know what theirs is. All right, that'll do it for us today. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll come back and wrap up the week tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We will see you then.